The decline of honeybees in the United States has been a hot topic in recent years. Farmers, economists, and President Barack Obama have all been vocal about the economic and ecological risks of the species' declining population. But honeybees aren't the only pollinators we should be worried about, according to a new study published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Wild bees are seeing their numbers decrease, too. Here to talk about why that matters is MSU entomology professor Rufus Isaacs, who co-authored the study. Rufus, welcome back to Current State.
Good morning. Happy New Year.
Same to you. Thank you. This is the first study to map the populations of wild bees. These are bees other than commercial honeybees across the United States. Talk to us about what you found.
Yeah, that's right. So this is a new study that just came out right before Christmas. And we had a team that got together from four different institutions, including Michigan State, and took data on how land use has changed across the United States. This is national level data from satellites. And then took our knowledge of how land use affects wild bee populations, and then mapped that across the country, and also looked at where the need for wild bees would be the greatest in terms of crop production. So areas where there's crops like almonds, blueberries, apples, pumpkins that need pollination from bees, and just looked at how those patterns lined up. And one thing that we found that really jumps out in this study is that the areas where there's the greatest estimated decline of wild bee abundance is also some of the areas where we have the greatest need for them in terms of crop pollination.
But we're seeing shrinking habitat. Is that one of the takeaways?
Yeah, one of the takeaways is that there has been a change in land use driven partly by high corn prices. Farmers that produce a lot of the field crops when there were very high record prices for corn took some of the land that was in conservation programs and turned it into areas for crop production. Makes sense from an economic point of view. But that is one example. Other changes have happened where overall it's declined the quality of the land according to our estimates for wild bee populations, but also the fact that a lot of that change happened in areas that was near these pollinator-dependent crops means that we estimate there's more of a mismatch between the need for those wild bees in these crop areas and the ability of the land to provide those bees to do the pollination work.
How many different species of wild bees are there in Michigan, for example?
Well, in Michigan, we have a fairly rich community. We have somewhere between 450 and 475 different species of wild bees.
That's bees. That's not wasps, hornets.
Just bees.
That's an extraordinary number. I never would have guessed that.
It is a high number, and it surprises people when they might know a honeybee or they might know a few bumblebees. But, yeah, we have a very diverse community of wild bees. And in the U.S. as a whole, there's something like 4,000 different species across the country. So really diverse group of insects, and people are studying all their biology and ecology. But there's also now a great interest in their ability to pollinate crops and the extent to which we can support their abundance on farmland is part of what we're studying here at MSU, so that we can give growers good recommendations on how they can support wild bee abundance, just to provide some insurance. Lots of farmers of these crops use honeybees. They bring in big numbers of colonies of honeybees to pollinate in the springtime. But these other wild bees can provide some of that pollination. And in some cases, there's recent studies that show that the wild bees can actually make the honeybees work a little better as well. So there's some interactions there.
Rufus Isaacs is a professor of entomology at Michigan State. We're talking about his recent work mapping wild bee populations across the U.S. Your study focused on habitat loss as a predictor of wild bee populations, but are there other threats to those species besides habitat loss?
Yes, there are. There have been some reviews of what's known in the literature that highlight habitat loss is a big part of this, but then there's also potentially increases in the level of diseases. So bees get diseases just like humans get diseases. And there's some viruses and bacteria, fungi that can attack them. And so some of the surveys have shown elevated levels of those certain diseases in wild bees that correlate with declining abundance. And it's interesting that there's a link there too, where bees that are in habitats that have a rich source of pollen and nectar from flowers tend to be more resistant to diseases, just like there's a link in humans' nutrition to disease. So it's similar in bees. And so there may also be interactions there between disease and habitat quality. But also pesticide exposure has been in the news a lot as a potential additional cause of stress in both honeybees and wild bees.
What crops are most at risk from declining wild bee populations?
So in our analysis, in this current study, we highlight crops where the abundance of them is increasing and where that's happening in areas where we're predicting that the wild bee abundance is lower. So those would be crops like blueberries, apples, cherries, pumpkins, almonds. So crops that wouldn't produce a commercial yield unless they had a good supply of bees. And that's provided in commercial farms both by honeybees and wild bees. But this analysis just focuses in on the wild bee component.
But could a decline in the wild bee population be supplemented or be compensated for by importing honeybees?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's how growers are responding to this challenge.
That's how growers have responded already. I mean, in the larger areas of production of these crops, such as the Central Valley of California, there are literally millions of honeybee colonies that go there in February and March to pollinate almonds and then other crops. So this is already, the system is already set up in this country where beekeepers meet that demand from the growers. But what we're saying here is that if these trends continue, then those crops will become more and more dependent on honeybees. And with all things, it's good to have a diversity strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, diversity is a good idea.
How would farmers know whether or not their crops are getting enough pollination? Would they would they notice a significant bee decline, for example?
Well, you might not notice it in an individual year, but you know, we've had springs here. I'm sure people listening remember 2012, where we had 80 degree weather in March. And all of a sudden, those flowers from those crops were in bloom, and we had poor pollination that year because of early frost damage, and people really noticed it that year. So it's not going to be that extreme. You wouldn't see that level of decline or loss of yield. But growers have ways of testing their crop. They could cut open an apple and look for the number of seeds. They could do the same with a blueberry. Those kinds of techniques can be used to estimate pollination.
Briefly, Rufus, talk to us about the ways that we might combat the loss of wild bees.
Well, there's a number of programs that the federal government has invested in through the Natural Resource Conservation Service that's part of USDA. And so farmers can actually, in some parts of the state, they can get a very good payment to establish habitat on their farms for pollinators. So there's some requirements that you have to, some hoops that you have to jump through. But there is now funding as part of this focus by the government, as you mentioned at the beginning, to support pollinator habitat, putting that back into farms.
Rufus Isaacs is a professor of entomology here at Michigan State University. We've been talking about his recent research, mapping the decline of wild bee populations, and there are many more species of those than you probably imagine. He's been mapping those populations in the United States. Rufus, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
This segment is supported by Michigan State University's Knight Center for Environmental Journalism. More news about the Great Lakes environment can be found at greatlakesecho.org and on Current State every Tuesday as part of our partnership.